Welcome back to Space Castle, your clubhouse and ours for all things nerdy. I'm Seth.
I'm DT.
And I'm Soph.
Hey, we have a guest today. So I've been thinking about this question for years, actually, to be honest, mostly because of my lifestyle is terrible for my heart and for my sleep.
Your friendships.
My friendship. Honestly, it's a strain for everything. And I thought that I am just a person to seek out challenges and stressful situations and things like that. But I've been thinking for a while that, like, maybe humans in general are kind of wired for stress.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to talk about. Are we as people kind of wired for stress? Do we seek it out? Why do we seek it out? Because I know so many people that, like, actively seek out stressful situations, and stress is not good for us, but we still thrive on it sometimes. So we've got a guest here today, Soph from Soph's Notes, absolutely delightful human, and I'm glad that she's here because she's a lot smarter than I am, a lot smarter than DT is, and frankly,
way smarter than Alex.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully she can shed a little bit of light, maybe have a conversation about this, because I honestly think about it like every single day. It's like, why?
Wow.
Why do I seek out such stressful situations when I know it's so bad for me, like, physically?
It sounds like you're getting in a cycle because this is causing you stress, right? This question is causing you stress, and then you're seeking that out.
The idea of stress is causing you stress, yeah. Welcome to being a millennial.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm intrigued, Seth, before I start thinking about the science of this. What level of stressful situations are we talking here? Like, what kind of stress are you seeking out?
For me, I was an extreme sports athlete, thrill seeker, adrenaline junkie all through my teenage and 20s and stuff. But since I became a software engineer, so I'm working like 18-hour days sometimes, like, that's a very stressful career that I love,
mm-hmm.
and I obviously chose to transition into. I'm constantly doing hobbies. I'm learning a billion things. I'm pushing my sleep schedule because I'd rather read another chapter instead of go to bed. Like, I feel anxious and unsettled when I'm not actively doing something, and that's stressful, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I know lots of people that are like, yeah, you know, I get bored, so I became a lawyer instead. Like, I know several people that are, I don't know, actively avoiding the boredom of sitting around doing nothing, right? So, like,
yeah.
It makes me think that while cortisol destroys our bodies, it's also something that we need, right? It's kind of like oxygen, where oxygen just destroys everything and oxygenates the whole world, right? But we need it to live, right?
that is the science of it. It does oxygenate the whole world. You're right. It sounds like it's a classic just addiction cycle, isn't it? Of just getting a dopamine hit when you complete some work or something like that. And then, you know, you need to keep doing the thing that's giving you the dopamine in order to keep giving you the hits. And I guess that's why people in stressful jobs, they get addicted to that dopamine loop, I suppose. It's quite interesting because cortisol, like you mentioned, can make parts of your brain more sensitive to dopamine. So it can make you more, the more stressed out you are, the more sensitive your brain is to getting rewarded when you, like, complete a thing. So yeah, I do think you can get, like, addicted to stress, basically, which it sounds like a lot of people are, I think. I don't know. Do you like stress, DT? What's your opinion? Okay.
I hate stress in any form. I am very much like a chill, relaxed guy. Like, when I get stressed out, people are like, whoa, DT stressed out, what's going on? Like, I'm not that guy at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, like, our ancestry, like, yeah, as like hunter-gatherers, we were like avoiding and evading predators and like trying to stay alive. But aside from that, just survival stress, like, we were more or less programmed to just, like, gather berries and do some fishing and, you know, hunt some pig and, like, vibe for the rest of the day and just, like, survive. At what point and why is it that we now, like you said, like, we crave that hit of, like, jumping on social media and, like, arguing about politics with, you know, random human beings? Why do we feel the need to buy and play Elder Ring until we throw the controller out the window in rage?
I think you might be right in the dopamine. Growing up as various types of athletes, right, I knew a lot of people that had dopamine reuptake problems.
Mm-hmm.
I have kind of a pet theory that that's kind of what makes adrenaline junkies. They have dopamine problems. Like, maybe that's what it is, where we now, in the information age, are so easily and overstimulated. We need the extra challenge of these challenging tasks or challenging hobbies or constant go, go, go to get that like extra or more sensitive dopamine hit just to kind of get back to that regular almost baseline.
Yeah, exactly. The baseline has been pushed up so high because we're constantly surrounded by things that are giving us shots of dopamine. And that does tie into what you're saying, DT, about hunter-gatherer vibes, is that, yeah, like, obviously we had stress of surviving, like, running away from a lion or whatever it would have been that was chasing us. But, like, that was very typical fight or flight response as we would consider it now when we talk about it, right? You talk about fight or flight, you think about running away from a lion. You don't think about having to get a big project to your boss. But that's like, you know, running away from a lion takes however long it takes to get away from a lion, I don't know, or until you get killed. Whereas putting in a project to your boss, that's like fight or flight that's lasting for like days beforehand. So yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that we're so overly sensitive to it, because we're just experiencing the same bodily responses, but for far, far longer, which then ties into the dopamine baseline thing, I feel.
I wonder if that plays into like, this is a super pop culture centric podcast, so of course my mind immediately goes into like, I wonder if this plays into like the types of media we like to consume.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it probably does, right? Is I was
like horror movies, for example.
Well, yeah, horror movies, but also look at, you know, 30, 40 years ago, the types of movies were slower. They weren't like this huge bombastic, they weren't Transformers, right? Transformers is like 11 out of 10 action all the time for two straight hours. And that's kind of becoming more normal, right? Is like, I wonder if we just want more stimulus now, not just stress or dopamine.
We just can't get enough of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I certainly can't.
Yeah, I feel like it is that, like, because also as the more we learn about the science of how we work, the more companies learn how to hack that, whether it's like film companies or like social media, whatever. So I agree. I think it's so much all the time of everything. Yeah.
It kind of brings up a thought that I have also been struggling with, apparently, because I'm realizing there's a connection here now.
This is now turning into like a therapy session.
Yeah, surprise.
I was just going to say, is this what I should be charging this by the hour. Like, my rates are very reasonable, Seth, if you want to have an appointment afterwards.
We'll have Alex cut the check for you.
Man, I'll just add it to my list of stressful bills.
Which you'll love, because I'll be stressing you out and you love stress.
Yeah, it's perfect. I do think that there's very specific kinds of stress that I like, because like, I definitely don't like the bills or the deadlines and stuff, but I do like learning new skills. I do like all of this stuff. But to go back to a different tangent, do you guys think that there is like an end game here? Are we going to get to a point where we're too stimulated to function? Are we going to get to a point where this stress dopamine response doesn't happen anymore and we're just burnt out all the time?
I would think it would happen during the period we're in now. Like, we have so much going on with war and a pandemic and gas prices going through the roof and all these crazy things. Nobody can find a PlayStation 5.
I know, right?
All these crazy things that are going on right now. And yet we're still actively pursuing more and more stress. Like, we can't get enough of it. Like, this is one of the most stressful points in modern history. And yet we're still like actively going out there on social media and trying to pick fights with people. I don't know if we're actively seeking the stress as like a means of relieving the stress and we're just doing more damage to ourselves inadvertently, or we just can't get enough of not feeling stressed out and angry all the time. Like, I wish we could just go back to just picking berries and fishing and vibing all the time.
Hey man, you can if you want.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'll end up, you know, unemployed and I'll definitely not be able to ever find a PlayStation 5, but yeah.
But you can build one out of some rocks. I'm sure it's like, you know, it's a good replacement. Use your imagination. Yeah, I think we're already getting to like burnout state. You're exactly right. Like, the levels of burnout are going through the roof. And I think you're also exactly right. And that's the nature of an addiction cycle, in that in order to relieve the thing that's making you, like the thing that's making you feel terrible is also the thing that you seek out because, you know, you're addicted to it. And yeah, the, you know, a dopamine hit from like, you know, opening a notification on your phone, you know, you don't link that to the stress that you're feeling, even though it is then going to create more. And I think in terms of us being hardwired to get stressed out, I think we're not necessarily hardwired to get stressed. We're hardwired to have a stress response. And then the way that our society has developed has then hijacked that response because it evolved and now it's not appropriate for the time that we're living in.
It's a useful thing to have, is a stress response like that, for a number of reasons. But if I've learned anything about capitalism, they're very good at exploiting useful things. So it's no surprise at all that this is getting blown out.
Yeah, I was gonna get onto capitalism, but I thought not get too hard into that.
Only a matter of time.
No, well, it's just, I mean, that's exactly it. Like, I was reading this, I'm reading this really interesting book called Less is More by Jason Hickel. And he was talking about how in kind of the 1300s, we were great at having holidays. And like, you know, so much of the year was just off and you were out on a break. And I just found myself thinking like, what? Like, how have we, in terms of vacations, to speak American, how have we gone so far backwards in that regard, like over, it's literally 700 years.
Capitalism.
Yeah, there it is.
In our Discord server, we, argue may not be the right term. We discuss capitalism a lot because it's like this weird root of all evil kind of thing where like it keeps cropping up. It's like, yeah, well, it's because capitalism does this or because it facilitates this or like this is shitty because of capital. Like it's kind of this weird sort of system designed to exploit humans that it does find its way into like everything.
Yeah.
And I actually just recently reread Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And it was much the same. Like I was listening to a podcast talking about the writing and the situation surrounding the creation of that book. It was a group of them. Granted, they were well off at the time, but they went into the country for like 8 months or 9 months to just hang out and like chill again before they went back into the city. That's buck wild to me. Like they just had holidays. They just went on vacations and chilled.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah. And like properly long, give your brain a break. And I find, I don't know how you guys feel, but if I ever try and instigate anything, you know, a week long, let alone 9 months, my brain cannot hack it. It's like, what am I meant to be doing? I should be doing work, you know?
Yeah. That, like I said earlier, I feel like legitimately anxious when I'm not actively doing something. Lately, especially when I'm trying to like take time to play video games to unwind or start a new book of the giant pile of them that I have. Like I feel anxious when I'm not being productive. And I know that that's not good. I know that that's not like how I'm supposed to think, but I still feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Seth and a couple of other friends came to my place in Colorado over New Year's for like a holiday. We went and did like breweries and like distillery tours and whatnot. And Seth at one point was like, I think I'm going to go home early because I really want to do work. And I'm like,
Seth.
It wasn't worded that way.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't offended. I was like, I totally got it because he was like, yeah, I got a lot of work to do. I think I'm going to go home like a day early. And I was like, cool, man. Like, all right. But I get Seth. I understand where he's coming from. But me, like, I'm not wired for that at all. I love my downtime. I crave that downtime and I cherish it. Like, that's my time to write or mess around with graphic design or play video games or, you know, stuff like that. Just I need that time to decompress and be away from the stress. So it's intriguing to me. And that's why I think this is an awesome subject, is because I don't have that wiring. I'm definitely that guy who would be just picking the berries and vibing all day and just doing what I need to do and like doing what I want to do with the rest of my time. I love that. And it's wild to me that so many people just function, and no offense to Seth, just the exact opposite way. Whether it's positive stress, like Seth taking on all these projects and wanting to learn things and build things and having that sense of accomplishment of completing something and having that tangible product. You can see behind him, our listeners can't see, but Soph can see that all those helmets and masks and stuff, like Seth made those. Like he's an amazing craftsman.
Wow.
Go on.
Your eyes are just sparkling in that eye light right now.
They're great.
Have you moisturized the beard? It just looks especially like radiant today. It looks amazing. Yeah.
Do you guys want me to leave you two alone, or
if you want to come back in like 5 minutes?
Oh wow, okay, that doesn't take too long.
No, I mean, yeah.
What's interesting is I never used to be like this. This is only like in the last few years, maybe, and I'm wondering why. I have a suspicion it's because of my career.
Yeah,
but I was always the super chill, super laid back. Like I used to like drive all night and just see the city and listen to music and do nothing. My dad used to always yell at me for doing so little in that day, which actually that might also be part of it too. But he used to be like, man, what are you doing? You're just sitting around watching TV for 10 hours on a weekend for no reason. It's like, go outside, do something. When I used to manage a rock climbing gym, like I didn't give a crap about nothing, man. It was chill. And now I can imagine managing a rock gym in an entirely different way because like sitting around doing nothing, listening to music and watching people climb, like I would feel anxious for not doing something.
Yeah, I feel like I'm quite similar to you, Seth, actually. I think I've done quite a lot of things, but I used to also be really good at having like mindful moments. Like I used to be quite a naturally mindful person. Like I would just, you know, really be in the moment and appreciate what was around me and all this. And then I think it really sneaks up on you. Yeah, you start focusing on work a bit more and next thing you know, you start some of the projects and it's all fun and all good. And then next thing you know, they take over and they seep into your weekends. And I think it really, really sneaks up on you. And I had this funny realization over the last couple of years of, oh, I actually really struggle to be at peace in calm moments.
Yeah.
Even though I love like going climbing up mountains and I love going to like quiet beaches and I love the countryside, but I find myself getting so distracted and then I get so annoyed at myself because I'm like, what happened to chill Sophie who used to be able to just zen out? So yeah, I get that.
Yeah, my attention is fractured now.
Yeah.
It's so fractured and short now. And I'm wondering if that's not a necessarily a natural cycle, but if that's a natural thing that happens that is being exploited by my environment, or if this is just, you know, an ebb and flow of life where, like, you know, when I hit my late 30s or when I hit 50 or whatever, then I'll chill back out. Like, is this just a high stress working period of my life, or is this like a change in my biology now where I'm like in this addiction cycle to the dopamine and cortisol cycle?
Maybe. Because, I mean, you and I went on significantly different career paths. Like, I went to film school, and film production is largely hurry up and wait. Like, get to the set early and wait. And, like, set everything up and then wait. And then do a shot and then reset the shot and then wait. And then going into graphic design as a career after the fact, again, like, I work largely in advertising and print. So I have structured deadlines. Everything has to be done and sent out at a certain day. And then there's a whole bunch of downtime after the fact. So my whole career has been wait, peak, come back down, and then wait. So maybe I'm just programmed that way too by external stimuli where it's just, I just naturally have that ebb and flow where I need that downtime. I love that downtime and I massively enjoy that downtime. And I don't need to fill it because those little peaks have all the stress I ever want or need. Yeah.
So you're doing the old school being chased by a lion version of stress. Like your career is tapping into how it kind of should be done. Whereas me and Seth are getting absolutely ravaged by productivity, hustle culture.
That's insightful. That's why Soph's on the show. that's an awesome like way of I didn't even think about that. I didn't even put the correlation together where I am still in hunter-gatherer mode because of how my career path has taken me. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I actually had never thought to connect graphic design and hunter-gatherers, but there we are.
I hadn't even realized that was the kind of cycle that career was on. Having worked with graphic designers closely as a software engineer, like I had assumed it was closer in methodology to software engineering. You're always designing a new thing, doing this project, doing that project, sending this out for review, whatever. But it sounds like it's a little bit more chill than that, which makes me super jealous.
Yeah. Oh, that jealousy suggests that you should, you know,
change careers again.
Yeah, that your stress isn't as important to you as you might think it is.
You're not wrong. And I don't think...
But don't become a graphic designer because I've got enough competition, my dude. Like, no.
Changing to graphic design would be the less competitive field compared to software engineering right now.
True. Very true.
But I don't want this stress. Like, consciously, I don't want to be stressed out, right? And I don't get stressed out very much, but I am constantly taking on new projects. I'm constantly starting new things, learning new things, and that is stressful. I have like a stressful life, but I don't like being stressed out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that maybe a career change may alleviate that, but it may not, because I may just take on some other project or do some other thing instead.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing where if you want to break it, it's going to be hard. It's going to be much harder than just continuing with it, because that's what an addiction cycle is. I can't remember who it was, but there's a philosopher I was listening to, and he was saying about how we as humans would be, if we took like, you know, if we had a 2-day working week, ultimately we would end up living more fruitful, productive, like healthier lives, but it would take about a year for us to get used to it because we're so used to working 5-day weeks that it would take us a long time to get over that. And it's the fact that people hate being bored and we're just not used to it. But boredom, for example, is a really useful thing. It's often when we're most creative, but it's really hard to get to that point because it's not what we're used to experiencing in terms of experiencing rewards. So you can't, I think, Seth, in your, when you were saying, am I built this way? I think you're not built that way. You're being hacked to feel that way.
Yeah.
And to unhack it, it will take effort, actually.
And time. I think that's the real crux of the situation is, and why it's so hard to get out of it is because it takes a long time to do that. And the systems around us are built to make us more productive, right? Is longer work days.
Are we back on capitalism again? Yeah.
Yeah, I think obviously.
Might be, yeah. Where else? All roads lead.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's how it is, right? Is like the system is kind of designed to make you as productive as possible so that everybody can build as much and make as much money and all that stuff. But because of that, it's even harder to take the year that it will take to change that because the entire time you're like battling up water to get there. The whole system is kind of angled against it. And I'm wondering if like I software development has a serious problem with burnout in general. And I'm wondering as that like burnout problem begins to bleed into other industries, if we're nearing that turning point where people just, and that I see a lot of like anti-work, 4-day work weeks, like that kind of stuff. And I'm wondering if we are kind of edging towards that turning point where like the working people just can't take it anymore.
Yeah, but then what will happen? Like if people can't take it, what will actually happen? Like who knows?
I don't know. It's probably not going to be good.
I don't know. I mean, we saw the great resignation not quite post-COVID. We're not done with COVID, but so many people who just got fed up with their current working environments and their current conditions and people just quit en masse. Maybe that's also in part because people got burnout on stress as well, regardless of their economic standings and whatnot. Maybe that was also a factor. Like you're going to a job you hate, you're dealing with people you may not necessarily get along with, you're not seeing any sort of like gratification in the work you're doing. And if the money doesn't add up, you quit. And that's what a lot of these people did.
Yeah. And working from home really added to that as well, because it was like, I have no work-life separation anymore. Although what was quite interesting in the UK, we had a system called furlough. Have you guys heard of this? People got furloughed.
My sister was furloughed.
Oh, okay, cool. What in the UK?
We have a similar concept here.
Oh, did you have a similar system?
Yeah.
Similar concept. I didn't know America would do furlough.
she was part of a union. Which unions are like Americans that treat workers like regular people. She had a bit of an advantage there.
You get a union behind you, you'll be absolutely sorted. Yeah, furlough is like when you take time off, but you still get paid, basically. And in the UK, loads of people were furloughed. So they were paid like 80% of their wage, but they didn't have to go into work. This was during COVID, like the peak of the beginning of COVID.
That's nice.
And so many people that I knew were like, I can't hack it. Like, what am I meant to do? I wish I was working. I was like, you're giving paid time to just do what you like. And it was beautiful weather, like, so people could at least go outside on walks once a day or whatever. People just were freaking out. So I don't know, even if people were burnt out and resigning, they still would want this structure of something to give their life meaning. I don't know. I think people just,
yeah. I think that's exactly the part of the problem. It's I know several people that have retired in their 60s or early 70s and find another job because they get too bored and they don't want to, like, they have to be doing something. Mm. Well, ultimately, you know what I wonder is if the high stress of a global pandemic will ultimately lead to a lower stress baseline as people realize that the work situations they were in were so toxic. And they start finding better work-life balances. More countries start adopting like a 4-day work week, et cetera. I wonder if, you know, 5-10 years from now, we'll realize that like, wow, the late teens, early 20s was like the most stressful work situation. And now it's a little better. I hope. God, I hope.
Yeah, that's a nice hope. We all were like, that's a nice hopeful view. I appreciate your optimism. it's what we need.
I feel like as soon as COVID is done and over with, we're going to go back to the norm as quickly as possible, because that's what corporations want.
Definitely.
So, it'd be nice if this was like a turning point and like a period of growth for us all, where we learn lessons and we become better as a society. But I think as soon as this is all done and over with, like, we're going to go right back to the way we were right before this whole thing kicked off.
Yeah. I've seen quite a lot of few people be like, COVID could be, like, post-COVID could be the fresh slate we all need. And I'm not seeing any of the signs of that other than people just saying it could be that.
You're right. It could be. But I think we may have missed the boat on that one already.
Yeah, not me. I learned how to design UI UX and I started a podcast, so I made the most of my COVID time. But
hey.
Yeah, the very productive COVID, but not in a overly productive hustle culture way.
Yeah, right.
Have you then always protected your free time? If you know it's so important to you, have you always just been like, free time, keeping that safe, not doing anything to like slither into it and start infecting it with work?
Well, I mean, starting the podcast kind of, I don't want to say infected it, but it does take up a significant portion.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you should be, Seth. And you know who really should be sorry is Alex. But no, I still have, I mean, I'm unmarried. I don't have kids. I live alone. So I still have a surplus of free time. So the podcast itself has become something of like a part-time job just because I'm doing the editing and the design and the three of us all engage in the social media and the marketing and whatnot. But it's something I massively enjoy, so it doesn't feel like I'm like doing chores or anything like that. It's something I've always wanted to do, and I'm glad that we were all afforded the opportunity to start doing it last year. And it's honestly, I've made so many more friends doing it. I've like my public speaking at work has like improved like tenfold because I've developed this gift for gab, and
that's great. This gift for gab, I love that. Yeah.
I still very much guard and protect my downtime, and I love it. And I love just going out to the brewery and having a pint and just relaxing. Or Sunday football is a very, very big deal for my family where we all get together and we all sit on the couch and we all have a good time just watching football and cheering. It's not soccer. Sorry, Sophie. It's American football.
That's okay. But you said you talked about pints, so I'm very pro pints.
There you go. Yeah.
I didn't even realize you did pints. I thought pints were very, very British thing. So that's my ignorance is showing.
We don't do rounds though, which is weird. I love the way like Ireland and England do like rounds in like a social drinking setting.
Yeah.
You kind of just like buy a round of beer and you don't do like the proper round. And I've always thought it would be really cool if America did that because it just seems like a super cool like social staple of how you guys drink over there.
It's great, yeah.
But we have table service here, which kind of ruins the whole thing. Like you don't actually go up to a bar and order a drink and go back to your table. Somebody comes over and takes your order. So the whole round system is just a non-starter here.
Oh, there's something so great about, yeah, that act of standing at a bar and like reeling off everyone's drinks and then being the hero who brings it back to the table. I love rounds.
Exactly. Like bouncing all the six mugs in your hand and trying to get back to the table. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
You guys should instigate the round culture, I think.
I've tried and people are like, we'll just wait for the waitress. And I'm like, but it's not cool. Like,
DT, why are you standing there? What are you doing? Sit down.
Right? Yeah. If I invite friends out for a drink or something or like dinner and I'll be like, all right, I got this round of beers. So like, what? Why? Yeah. It's like, so you can get the next round. Like, just relax. Like,
you just seem suspicious offering rounds.
Right. We're engaging as friends. We're rewarding each other's company. Like, just relax, man. You don't have to buy your own beers.
Why are you being a nice friend to me? Which one? What do you want from me?
Right. I need that stress hit. This whole conversation in this social setting is way too nice. I need stress. Like, let's create some static over these beers and ruin them.
Are you pro? Do you like rounds, Seth? Do you even know what we're talking about, rounds?
I only drink whiskey, so
okay.
Rounds are a different idea for me. And when I've been out with DT, even he's like bought our trivia table drinks or whatever, and I'm always like, no, DT, like that's fine for the, you know, $3, $4, $5 beers. My whiskey's like $25. Mm. Like, it's fine. I don't have
kids. I have a ton of disposable income. I'm fine like buying friends drinks. I'm down with that.
Seth, that sounds like a good way to get free whiskey, mate. So I wouldn't.
Yeah. So if come out to Colorado, I'll buy you beers too. Yeah. That's just how I roll.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yes. Love that. Yeah. Although if you don't drink, then it's similar. Like the round system can be really annoying if you end up buying everyone's drinks and then you're like, and I'll have my lemonade.
Yeah.
But I don't worry about that problem because I definitely get well in on the round system. Yeah, it's great.
And, there's Goldblum. I think it's his turn to buy us around, I think.
I think so, too, actually. I think it's well overdue, actually, Goldblum. Get over here.
I feel like we've been buying him all the rounds. Now it's his time to go up to the bar and buy a round. Like, what the fuck, Goldblum? Come on.
Just have one ordered. You're in the system, Goldblum. Just ping it. It's fine. It'll come right to us.
Exactly. Can we reprogram him with UK etiquette? Because I feel like his etiquette could be so much better, especially when it comes to drinking, if we just reprogrammed him with UK etiquette. Americans don't know how to drink.
Look, I'm doing most of the programming here, and like, I'll do my best, okay? But I'm no expert.
Maybe we'll have Soph while she's here kind of take a look under the hood and tinker around some stuff, see what she knows.
Perfect.
In the meantime, though, we've got some messages from Earth we've got to get to. We're going to take care of those real quick, and we're going to be back with more Soph from Soph Notes here in Space Castle.
Join the Dames,
an actual play podcast.
I'm Chrissy.
I'm Maddie.
I'm Lydia.
And I'm Jacob, the guy they roped into running this thing.
As we play a new indie system each season.
With danger.
And plenty of dice and drama.
And jokes.
Are we doing this as our characters?
You don't have to.
You don't have to. You can do whatever.
But we have character voices this time.
I mean, you can sound like a robot, I guess.
Go again.
Okay.
Welcome to danger.
Go again. All right. I don't know what my character voice is.
Welcome to Danger Dames.
As always, some fantastic messages from Earth. Soph has made the long trek from England, Earth, through deep space to come hang out at the Space Castle with us. Soph, have you discovered anything awesome and cool and interesting you want to share with us and with our listeners?
I have, yeah. On the long journey, I needed something to keep me upbeat, keep me entertained. And I started feeling a bit nostalgic. Now, I'm a younger sibling. I've got an older brother and older sister. And it means I got to watch a lot of video games, but I didn't get to play very many. So I have such a happy relationship with video game music. Sonic music especially, I adore it. That's the main one that's in my heart at the moment, just because... Well, because I've been watching YouTube videos that analyze video game music. And I'm not much of a musician, but there's someone in particular. He's quite a big YouTuber, actually. He's called Charles Cornell. Have you guys seen him?
I've heard of him, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he had one that was about the music from Sonic R, the Sonic Racing game. And apparently this game was absolutely panned. People hated it. I don't know why, because I adored it. But I guess I was quite young when we played it. But the music in it is incredible. And there's something about watching this really amazing pianist analyze the music. And even though I don't really get what he's saying, but I feel his passion. And he sat there, oh, we go from a D sharp diminished, and then we go into this, and it's just absolutely incredible to hear video game classics analyzed that way. And it made me A, want to learn to play the piano, and B, want to replay all those old games. And also, there's something about hearing piano covers of old video game music that makes me feel really emotional.
Same. Like, if you hear like Celeste's theme from Final Fantasy VI done on piano, it is the most moving thing. Or the aria from Final Fantasy VI as well. It's this amazingly orchestrated, Nobuo Uematsu is just a master composer, but all of his music, and I think he largely writes a lot of the Final Fantasy music on piano, much the way John Williams will do his scratch tracks before they bring the orchestra in. So I think it's largely because it's breaking it down to its most core element, but you're right. Like, I'll watch those videos and I'll get emotional too. It's
yeah,
a combination of nostalgia tied in with just the amazing talent on display. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, not to go on about Sonic.
Oh, please do.
When I watched the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, what did you guys think of that?
I thought it was better than it had any right to be, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. It absolutely banged. It was so good.
Yeah, I agree.
It felt like those movies you would rent from Blockbuster Video in the 90s, and you knew they're going to be kind of terrible, but you were 12, so it was good anyway. And it brought back that rush of old school, 90s childhood emotions for me. It just had that vibe to it, and it just worked for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was brilliant. And I was super surprised by that as well. But when there's the bit where they have the Green Hill Zone piano cover in it, and I just was like, tearing up, and I was like, this is ridiculous. I just felt so nostalgic, but it was so great. So yeah, the person who I've come across and kind of gone into those videos is Charles Cornell, analyzing loads of video game music. I think it's a series he started relatively recently, and he's done a bit of Sonic, he's done a bit of Breath of the Wild, obviously. He did the various examples of Wii music. So he did the Wii theme and the Wii Sports
the
theme,
Wii
and then
theme?
He did the Wii.
Okay, yeah. To derail a second, the Wii Sports theme is unreal. It's so
good. It's so good, isn't it?
I sometimes listen to it like just straight up. It's so good.
It's just so good. And he did the Wii Shop as well, which reminds, have you seen that Wii Shop Wednesdays thing? Harvest Moon, da, 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 da. It's like a bossa, yeah. bossa beat. So awesome. Yeah, and then there's, and then I got caught down the rabbit hole of like YouTubers that analyze game music. Like there's a guy called 8-Bit Music and he does it like quite thoroughly. There's another guy called Alex Yard and Knuckles, who's quite, he's a much, much smaller YouTuber. He did one on the Ice Cap Zone, which is another Sonic tune that's like do 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 do, another banger.
Yeah, the snowboarding level.
Yeah, the snowboarding one, exactly.
In Sonic 3.
Yeah, exactly. And I just love it. I'm not a musician, but it just makes me feel great.
Speaking of Sonic 3, do you know about the connection between Sonic 3 and Michael Jackson?
One of them talks about that in one of the videos.
Yeah, it's super wild that Michael Jackson was actually on board to write a bunch of music for Sonic the Hedgehog 3. And during that time frame, the whole scandal came up about, you know, him having children at Neverland Ranch. We won't get into that. Mm-hmm. But if you go back, you listen to the soundtrack for Sonic the Hedgehog 3, it's very much lifted from a bunch of songs that Michael Jackson wrote from the time. Like you can play them side by side. Like the end credits especially are like straight up like Michael Jackson.
Huh.
Like he just took his songs that he owned and he was going to license them out and rearrange them and they were going to be thrown into the game. I don't know how they worked it out so they were able to keep legally using the music in the game.
I think they might have had a writer in common. Like they had someone who wrote for Michael Jackson who they brought in for the game. Yeah.
I think you might be right.
Interesting.
I think I learned that from one of these YouTube videos that I watched. yeah.
You listen to the soundtrack for Sonic 3 and there's even like the like little like Michael Jackson sound bits, like his noises he would make when he was like dancing and singing.
In the
yeah, like the snaps and the and that type of stuff. Like it's in there. It's super wild. Yeah.
And if you listen really closely, Tails actually has the voice of Michael Jackson. If you listen really No, not at all.
What I wouldn't give for that to be accurate.
Yeah. Oh,
gosh dang.
Yeah. But there's another YouTuber who he's called Geo Wizard.
I love Geo Wizard.
Yeah, he tries to cross country in straight lines. Big up Wales. And yeah, and his soundtrack, he soundtracks all his videos with 8-bit music that he's, and then he released it as an album, didn't he?
I listen to it constantly. It's great programming music.
Oh, yeah, it's great. And again, weirdly, it's nostalgic, even though you didn't listen to it when you were younger, but it's just something about it that's so, so amazing.
We tend to glob on to those like things that capture the spirit of nostalgia without being nostalgic.
Mm-hmm.
At least I do, and I know DT does as well. But there's something really magical about a new thing that can capture that spirit of like our childhood.
Oh, I think that's why like retro wave is so popular right now as a music genre.
Oh, retrowave. What's that?
It's a genre of music that's kind of like techno, but it brings up a lot of the old like synthesizer sounds from like the 80s and early 90s. It's all like neon purples and pinks and like Atari style graphics and whatnot. And it's become like a huge thing, especially on YouTube, where there's channels that have millions of followers and listeners. It's just dedicated to people creating synthwave tracks and just throwing them up there and making compilations.
I listen to hundreds of hours of them while I program for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm on Odysseus and like Chill Hop all the time. Like it's just, that's my like graphic design and podcast graphic design music time. That and of course like the Tron Legacy soundtrack, but we've done a whole episode on that before.
So, obviously. We honestly can't talk enough about it because it's phenomenal, but yes.
I feel like I'll have to get some retrowave on in the background when I'm trying to work then because I'm trying to find some new music.
I highly recommend.
Yeah, I'll send you some links.
Oh, great. Thanks, TT.
It's one of those things where people, I don't know, a decade ago realized that like that 140 to 165 beats per minute music was like really easy to focus with. So retrowave is all that. It's so easy to focus with it on because it's like kind of made with that in mind.
It's a steady rhythm. You can zone out on it. And it's something that you are engaging with while you're doing like a repetitive or design task. It doesn't encroach and it doesn't take over your brain. It's not distracting. It just kind of fuels your sort of brain waves. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Let's do more of nostalgia pursuits and listening to synthwave and less seeking out stress. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a little bit of a tangent and rehash, but I've been trying to seek out longer form YouTube videos because I watch so much fucking YouTube, which I have kind of realized that, like, over the last few years, my YouTube preference has gotten shorter and shorter and shorter, where I was going from, like, you know, Vsauce videos constantly to, like, Jacksepticeye to, like, now 4 or 5 minute YouTube. Like, my attention span has gotten shorter. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is really helping fuel this fractured, distracted, constantly trying to do a thing.
Yeah.
So I've been actively trying to, like, seek out more long form YouTube content so that I can kind of slow it down a little bit and just try and force myself to fucking chill.
That's funny because I feel like my YouTube is like, what's recommended to me is getting longer and longer and longer. Like, I think I'm getting the opposite, where like people who write these massive video essays, like, I get really pulled into them, which is terrible because I should be. I go on YouTube to like check one thing, and next thing I know, I'm watching like an hour and a half video about the history of the Disney Fast Pass or whatever. So yeah, on Defunctland and all that.
Did you watch Jenny Nicholson's Defunctland?
No, so that has been on my watch later forever.
Do it.
So
it's
I
great.
Need to. Like, okay, I'll sit down.
Yeah, that it's one. Wonderful. All I've learned from this is that YouTube's algorithm knows that Soph is very smart and needs more long form stuff, and I'm very dumb and needs a short attention span stuff. The almighty algorithm.
No, it's learned that you've got like a dopamine hit response that it really wants to hack. It's really gonna work that one hard. Just while we're talking about 8-bit music, I've just got one other interesting thing I learned, which is about, it's just so clever. Like, so the old, like, Pokemon games, the kind of music from those, like, you know, the music in the towns or whatever, that 8-bit music, it has like 4 channels and they can only play a note, basically 4 notes at a time. So if they want to play a chord, they can't play all like 3 notes from a chord because it's taking up 3 of the channels. So they play the notes as an arpeggio, and then it makes it sound like the whole chord is being played when it's not. And that's why, like, often those kind of songs can sound a lot more, I don't know, like almost like a piece being played on the piano, like whatever.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's just really clever. And the way they do harmonies, I just think it's absolutely genius.
Yeah, richer than they actually are. Yeah.
Those old, like, NES, SNES era games were clever in a billion different ways.
They had to be, yeah.
They're works of genius, like, every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about it before, but there's a few YouTube channels that will break down 8 and 16-bit games of, like, how they cleverly mirror pixels on both sides of the screen and, like, all kinds of crazy, crazy level stuff. And that the music is obviously part of that. They're masterpieces. Like, each and every cartridge is a work of genius, how they manipulate console memory and do crazy stuff with, like, no resources, all kinds of cool stuff.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's super wild. Yeah. Seth, don't ever get into making games, though, because I hear that's very, very stressful.
Yeah.
Making games is actually how I started programming. It's still a thing that I do as a hobby.
Is it? Oh, yeah. There we go. There we go. Do you make the music? Would you make the music for the games as well?
Yeah, but I'm really bad at it. So
a new skill you can learn. I hear you're in the market for learning new skills.
Yeah. So I used to play guitar when I was younger. And I've been kind of wanting to pick it up again. I haven't because I don't have time, but maybe I will. I'm trying to find hobbies that will trick my brain into feeling productive while I'm actually being, like, downtime.
See, this isn't what we were talking about, Seth. You need to take a break. You know, actually, one thing I read about stress was this article about, like, why we get stressed and why, da da da. And one thing was like, if you want to learn to relax, just see relaxing as a task you need to complete. And then your productive brain will relax. I was like, that's so depressing. But also, that is exactly what I do. I write, like, have a relaxed afternoon on my to-do list. And then it's like, okay, great. I'm going to relax in the best way possible. I'm going to be so relaxed. It's awful. It's so messed up.
But for me, that's like laying in bed at night to be like, go to sleep, go to sleep. Go to sleep,
yeah,
go to sleep. Like,
yeah.
Your brain's going to want to do the opposite of what you're telling it to do. Ah.
grotesque, man. Anyway.
It is a little sad to think about, but at this point, like, if it works, it works. I'm not going to complain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a listener question. You guys interested in a listener question? So, are you up for the challenge of answering a question for one of our crazy listeners?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm scared, but I'm excited.
Oh, it'll be all right. Don't worry about it. Don't be scared.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
We're going to help you through it.
That's the most. That's going to just make you more scared. Don't be scared. Don't cry. It's okay.
I'm definitely going to cry now. Don't tell me nothing.
We'll play you some sad video game piano music.
Oh, don't. It doesn't have to be sad. It just has to be just piano. It could be flipping Live and Learn from Sonic Adventure 2, and I'll still cry if it's a piano cover.
Having a nice cry session would really complete this episode as a therapy session. Yeah. Like, for real.
We'll get there, Seth. Depends what the listener question is. We'll get to your cry session in a minute.
So this question comes to us from Zane. And before I ask the question, Seth, do you want to tell the people how they can get in touch with us and ask questions of their own?
Absolutely. You can hit us on Twitter at SpaceCastlePod. It's the same handle there and Instagram. You can also send us more long form emails if your brain just has like stress on its mind and you just got to get it out. So like write us a long email. I will read it at least. And you can do that at SpaceCastlePodcast@gmail.com.
We have also got a hotline. You can call us anytime, day or night, and leave us a message at 1-970-591-3577. And we cannot wait to hear from you.
So do you want to tell people how to find you?
Oh, yeah, sure. If you want to ask me a question or just say hello, you can find me on Twitter at Soph's Notes and on Instagram at the same. And my YouTube channel, funnily enough, is also called Soph's Notes. I make videos about bits of biology and psychology that interest me, like dessert stomachs and anxiety and earworms was a recent one. So that's me.
That was a great episode, by the way. The INMI stuff was like really fascinating to me.
Oh, thank you.
I legit had to pause it when you said the earworm earwig thing, because like it was just like a little passing joke as your intro.
It was about 5 seconds in, yeah.
Yeah, and I like chuckled, and then I like got distracted. I was like, earworm and earwig, like, okay, earwig is an actual bug, right? Yeah. And I like Google it, and then I realized that the video had continued on for like a minute. I was like, wait, no, I gotta go back.
Yeah, so my videos are so good, they make you get distracted whilst you...
For real.
It's kind of meta, too, that you were able to distract him and put like an earwig in his ear and like...
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah. That was actually my like deep intention, so I'm really impressed that I managed it with someone. Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for being nice about the channel. That's so sweet of you. Thank you.
Nah, we love the channel. It's fantastic. It's great.
Yeah, I've been an admirer of your work for literal years.
Oh, like, Seth.
It's hard for me not to be just starstruck this entire episode. Like, let's get to the listener question before I'm over it.
Seth, stop it. That's so sweet. No, you.
Okay, now me.
Okay. Oh, DT, I just love your relaxed nature.
Yeah, totally. Okay, enough gushing, enough crying. This question came to us from Zane, and he was kind enough to send this via our Gmail account. The question is, and I'm reading this verbatim. Thank you again, Zane. What is the most life-changing thing you can buy for $100 or less? And Soph, we can alter this to say 100 pounds or less.
Thank you. Which means I gained some pounds there, right? That's good for me. Cracking. Okay, the most life-changing thing. What do you guys reckon? What comes to mind?
DT, you go first, because I know you've thought about this, and I haven't thought about this yet.
The most professional of podcasters right here.
I mean.
Yeah, my choice is obvious. It's a book. Like, you can buy a really good book. It could be like an expensive textbook or something, but you can learn about history. You can learn ways to improve yourself. You can learn a brand new skill, which can lead into a new career, and there's boundless possibilities with books, and they're typically not that expensive.
That is a good answer.
A very good answer.
I know.
And I'm upset I didn't think of it.
What is a life-changing book you've bought then, DT?
Oh, like one of the most like life-changing books for me, honestly, and it's maybe a little cliche to say so, was Life of Pi by Yann Martell. It's just this really beautiful sort of self-reflective story about a boy who's been marooned off of a ship that was traveling from India to Canada, stuck in a lifeboat with various animals that were being transported as well. And it's a really trippy book. It's really interesting, but it's all about like social dynamics and what goes through your head in traumatic situations and just survival mode, which is actually kind of fitting because we've been talking about stressors this entire episode. But it's a very famous book. I'm sure most of the people who are listening have read it. If not, check it out for sure. It was one of those things where, like, wow, books don't have to be boring. They can really make you think, and they can challenge you, and they can actually change your way of thinking and make you become a reflective person and become a better person on top of that.
Wow, that was a really good answer. Yeah, that was the gift of the gab is really there. Wow. Yeah, I've not read the book and I've not seen the film. And it's a stage show now in London, at least. Yeah. And actually, someone I know, their boyfriend plays one of the puppeteers of the tiger. So he actually, because he was in War Horse as well, and he played like the horse. He's like a...
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they actually, like, the seven people who play the tiger have been nominated for an Olivier Award, which is like the musical theatre award, which is so cool. It's like all the nominees, it's like single actors' names. And then it's like, and the seven actors who play the tiger in Life of Pi.
Wow, that's rad.
Yeah. But I will add that to my reading list. That's a really good one.
It's quick too. It's like 500 pages. So I think the first time I read it, I probably tore through it in like an afternoon. But it's one that I keep revisiting because every time you read it, you get something different out of it.
I love books like that.
Yeah.
That's something I like to do too, is go back and read old books as I get older and mature more, just to see how my perception of them changes every time I read them.
Wow. I mean, I'm impressed you have time to go back through books, because I think I'm like Seth. I just have a pile of to read that I never get to. See, this is the benefit. If we have more free time, we'd have more time to read. That is actually the thing that I love most when I actually relax, is I get through books like nobody's business. I just read and read and read.
Yeah.
Having switched mostly to audiobooks lately, I can do them while I do some particular tasks, which is doubling up on productivity is excellent.
The man never stops. The fact that we've been able to make him sit still for an hour is just amazing.
I know. I feel like you've got other places to be, Seth. Like.
I do a billion things. It's, yeah. I actually took this whole day off, and it's the first like paid time off day that I've taken from work that I don't have other meetings to attend even while on my day off. So.
Congratulations. That's growth. That's growth right there.
I promise to only start two new projects today. I'm surrounded by books. The shelf above my bed is all my favorite books and the books I tend to revisit when I can.
Harry Potter or something.
But my to-be-read list is ever-growing, and I actually haven't read Life of Pi, surprisingly. In grade school, we had like books we had to read or whatever for some class, and we had a choice, and one of the choices was Life of Pi, but I ended up reading, I think, Tuesdays with Maury. I don't know. A book I don't remember, but I remember making the choice, maybe I'll check out Life of Pi. It's got a tiger on the cover. Like, it can't be that weird, right?
Oh, it's super weird.
Still have yet to do it.
It gets really trippy.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
Okay, a life-changing thing. I kind of have I have a straightforward answer, and I have like a more, oh, this is not really life-changing, but it is. So I think a life-changing thing is, for me at least, glasses. I have really bad eyesight, so obviously buying glasses completely changed my life because I could see properly. And then to an extent, contact lenses, because now I wear contact lenses all the time. But it always, yeah, there's been once or twice where I've had to like make my way home without any sort of form of glasses, not driving or anything, just like walking or like getting a bus like over uni when I was at uni.
That sounds like a headache.
Yeah, well, it was a headache, and it was also very stressful because I was like, gosh, I really have terrible eyesight. My cuter answer is something that I have an obsession with feeling really cozy. I love to feel cozy. I'll go into a room and I'll do everything I can to like cozify it. And something that's changed my life via changing my living space is buying like loads of fairy lights. Like, I just love having fairy lights in my space. And then it makes me a home feel so much more like a home. And then that kind of changes my life in the sense of making me feel so much more relaxed when I'm home, because I live in like a top floor London flat. Like, it's not massive and it can be quite loud with the road, and I think fairy lights just change your whole mood as soon as you get in. So I'd say a load of fairy lights and awesome glasses are my life-changing thing.
I love that. That's awesome.
I don't know if you can get glasses for under $100 in America these days.
I was going to make the same joke, man.
Yeah.
Not with our healthcare system, no, but it's applicable for UK, so we'll let it stand. It's a great answer.
And a £100 pair of glasses is like bougie, like fancy.
Oh, man. Here it's like you can get frames for like $150 and the lenses are like $300.
That's with insurance. It's awful. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a joke.
It's terrible.
Wow.
Yeah, capitalism.
Oh my days. Okay.
Yeah.
That may be like a middle of the pack pair of glasses. That's not the cheap. You can probably find prescription glasses for about $100, but you won't get a whole lot of choice.
I mean, if you really needed glasses here, you could get them on the NHS, I'm pretty sure.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, but move to England, guys. I mean, don't, because we're also not a great place to live in lots of ways. Anyway, Seth, what are you buying to change your life?
I want to first second the fairy lights thing. I was always seeing pictures of fairy lights. I was like, oh, you know, it's cute and it's Instagrammy and I'm sure it's cozy, but about 2 weekends ago, I put up a blanket fort and a bunch of fairy lights for Nicole's birthday at the end of February. And looking at like a blanket fort with like fairy lights all in it, I was like, wow, this is actually like spectacular. I think I like this. I think this is amazing. So I fully am on board with the fairy lights train now. Like that 11 out of 10, it makes everything better.
Nice.
Agreed.
It does. Yeah. Have you taken the blanket fort down or is it still up?
Yes, yeah, so I unfortunately took it down. Not my decision either. She wanted to take it down and it was her fort to deal with. So took it down. My life-changing thing is not going to be nice or intelligent or heartfelt. It's just going to be accurate.
Uh-oh.
And the most life-changing thing that you can buy for $100 is meth. Like, it's not good, it's not pretty, I'm not proud of it, but it is accurate, so.
See, in the UK, I don't think you could get it for under
$100. Oh, really?
So this is where America and the UK switch. No, I don't know. No, you 100% could.
I actually don't know how much it costs either, but I would assume it's less than $100 because I feel like that's a lot of money for drugs.
It depends how much meth you're getting, but I guess if you're getting just a bit, then.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's parts of Seattle you can probably go out right now and figure out the street value and decide how much you want to spend.
You're not wrong. Yeah. I'm sure I could.
Wow. I mean, yeah, you're right there.
That's super life-changing.
Yeah. Sit in your blanket fort with your meth.
Yeah, it would definitely change your life.
Gosh.
Oh, man.
It's just all bad. That's just a straight down. That's a graph like this. Straight down.
It's still accurate, though. I mean, you're within the bounds of the question that Zane sent in. Sorry, Zane.
Yeah, sorry, Zane. Please, Seth, knowing your relationship with like dopamine, please don't go anywhere near.
Oh, no way. No way. I didn't start drinking until I was 29. I think I'm going to like start going off because like drinking's not good for you.
It can be good for you.
Mm. A glass of red wine once a day, something like that.
It's good for the soul.
In small amounts or whatever, yeah. There's a pretty good amount of research that points to like one unit of whiskey or so a day at maximum, but like usually two or three times a week can actually be quite good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Similar effects to red wine. They have similar tannin levels and also a whole bunch of other stuff. But point is, I may be addicted to stress, but I do still have pretty good self-control when it comes to like other shit. Yeah, okay. I'm not like just out of control maniac. I need that dopamine at all costs.
That's a relief to hear because that is the impression I've got from this whole conversation.
I mean, I'd like to dissuade that, but like I'm gonna go to my workshop basically right after this. So it's fine. I'm working on it.
And as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm gonna go play Nintendo.
What are you gonna go play?
I don't know. I was thinking Zelda. I got hooked back on Breath of the Wild again. We were talking about Breath of the Wild's music earlier, and I love the use of the music in that game because it's so sparse, and the little bits of music just help convey that sense of like isolation and loneliness and like fear, which is really cool. So yeah, it's a great game.
Really cool. Good choice.
Yeah.
Good choice. I'm playing a free download of a Yu-Gi-Oh game on Switch at the moment.
Nice. Yo! That's awesome.
Yu-Gi-Oh's sick. I have been watching Griffin McElroy play through a randomized version of The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past on like the SNES game.
Talk about stress.
Dude, for real. Ugh. He plays a randomized version where he dies in one hit, everything's in the wrong place, and his character is replaced with Guy Fieri, which is hilarious. And that has made me like really want to play that. I want like so I've made up like a space castle version of a randomized Legend of Zelda where you've got an astronaut instead of Link, and so maybe I'll actually fire that thing up and start playing old Link to the Past.
Play that, yeah. You should film it. I'd love to see that. I love randomized versions. They're so bonkers.
I've actually never played one, but I've seen plenty of them played. Maybe I will do that.
Yeah, and that counts as time off, so I think you definitely should do that.
I struggle so much with that. Like, I feel so unproductive and anxious when I'm playing video games now, which sucks because I love video games.
No, no.
I'm working on it. I mean, it's fine. I'm getting there. I've identified the problem.
That false sense of accomplishment from video games is one of the things I live for, man. Like, yeah. If you can trick your brain into thinking you're accomplishing something, absolutely do that. You work that to your advantage, man.
It will definitely get you some dopamine.
100%. Sweet, sweet dopamine. That's what it's all about.
And it's way cheaper and better for you than meth. So
that's the bottom line.
It's definitely, definitely better for you. Video games are getting expensive, man. I don't know. I don't know how expensive meth is, so like that may not be true.
If you know how expensive meth is, please give us a call at 970-591-3577 or send us an email at spacecastlepodcast@gmail.com and let us know what the street value of I'm going to say an ounce because I have no idea how meth is measured. Let us know how much a meth goes for these days.
A meth.
A meth.
How much a meth goes for. I will have one of your finest meths, please. That's a whole different type of round, isn't it?
Yeah. Who's gonna buy the next meth?
I think we're losing grip here, guys.
I think we might be slipping.
Yes, I think it's time to. Yeah.
Might be a good time to call it quits on this episode. Thank you for listening to Space Castle. As always, it is your clubhouse and hours for all things nerdy. We want to thank our good friend Brian Lovett for helping us co-write our theme song, D's Notes. Become a Galactonaut. Patreon.com/SpaceCastlePod. Unless you guys want to talk about meth some more, my name is DT.
I'm Seth.
And I'm Soph. Thanks so much for having me. I've had a great time.
Thank you for coming and just really, really leveling up this podcast. Like, really taking it to a nice place.
Mate, we ended talking about meth. I don't think I've done anything good for you guys.
Honestly, it's one of the better endings we've had. Thank you guys so much. We will catch you next week.
Bye. Love you.
Bye. Love you guys. Bye.